Welcome to the Job Pod. I'm your host, Elijah. Episode 13 today, Amy Miller talking about her 25 years of legendary recruiting experience. What has happened over those 25 years? What it's like to handle thousands of requests an hour for a job at a company that does stuff with big satellites? Geek culture is near and dear to her heart, and we just had a great time laughing, chuckling, giggling. Grab the popcorn, put your feet up, and learn from Amy, would you?
Amy, all the way from the West Coast, thank you so much for joining the Job Pod. Great to have you. Hope you're doing well.
Thank you. Yes, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Can I ask when the last time is you went to your local bench and had a good cry?
It's been very cold and snowy. Yeah, I had to think about it. Yeah. Like, oh, you know the bench. You've seen it in my TikTok, I'm sure. It's a very special bench. It's probably been about 3 weeks. We've had quite a bit of snow in Seattle, which is very unusual for us. So I've been just crying at home.
So you're practically Canadian like I am, just complaining about snow.
Exactly. It's just good. A few hours away.
Yeah, just a few snowflakes. It's fine.
Yeah.
Self-care is big for you, which is great to see. And people don't always get why it's important. But do you think you need it more because you're a recruiting truth teller? You know, you bust myths about all the crap that people talk to you about?
It's really, you know, I thank my a combination of just so many years in the industry. I've been recruiting. I'm coming up on my 25th year, so that's fun. Started when I was 12, obviously.
Clearly.
Okay, maybe not quite 12. But I think it's a combination of being a recruiter for a really long time and then maybe a little bit of that Gen X upbringing. Like, I really have to separate what other people are thinking and feeling from my personal sense of self, right? Like, they will have one interaction with me and feel really good or feel really bad, and that's really not about me. Like, obviously I want people to feel good. I hope you leave this call, Elijah, feeling good about our interaction, but
we'll
also understand that this is a brief moment in time, right? Like, if we got to know each other really well and hung out all the time, no doubt we'd be besties. But I also recognize that this is a data point. And that's the big thing, you know, when it comes to kind of separating the personal from the professional and thinking about how we interact and how our conversations land with folks. It's a data point. Talk to me when there's a trend.
What's your data point on socials? Is that your reference to recruiters, job seekers, your audience? Do you just go out there and talk to yourself? What do you find mostly resonates with you?
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the reasons I started the YouTube channel, this has been, you know, what, 3 years now? I think this will be my January 1st will be kind of my third anniversary of creating weekly videos. And it started as just a way I couldn't keep up with one-to-one. I tried to do, you know, these ad hoc, you know, quick coaching sessions and jump on a call with anybody who asked for time and things like that. And just try to think of ways to reach job seekers, because I remember being that job seeker, even as a recruiter, you know, in my early years as a recruiter, like, I didn't know what I didn't know. And so my goal was to demystify how recruiting works. And then also, as my children got older, I've got two that are up and out. I've got two that are on their way, ready to launch. And I would give them advice, you know, getting into their first professional job, getting into their first, you know, high school retail job and everything in between, you know, figuring out colleges and things. And I realized that, you know, I'm giving this advice to my child who maybe isn't really listening because I'm mom and what do I know? What if I did this to a broader audience? What if I shared this publicly and gave folks at least a starting point of what to think about? There's so many nuances and everyone's individual situation is different, but let me at least give you somewhere to start. And I literally, a lot of the content I create is, well, I had this experience coaching my kid on negotiating an offer. I had this experience just last week, right? Had this experience helping my kid navigate, you know, an informational interview. And so I take that content and create it for the masses. And so I think the takeaway there, y'all, is I'm giving you the same advice I give my children who I gave birth to. I like them more than probably anybody else. So just so you know.
So it means something to the millions of followers on the YouTube. You're making an impact. That's cool.
All 7,000 of them. Yes.
Hey man, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
right on.
I hope so. I hope it's making an impact. I get nice emails once in a while. I appreciate it.
For sure. You're making an impact with recruiting in yoga pants, but I'm not really understanding the profit model because I maybe it's just a tax write-off. You do a lot of volunteer, right, at the local shelter.
I do. So the fun fact about that, I haven't run the numbers for end of year. Obviously, we're getting very close to end of year, but I think last time I checked just a couple weeks ago, because I am preparing my next donation, I think I made something like $1,100 in ad revenue from the videos. I mean, they're short videos,
Yes.
they're 10 minutes long, right? They're not huge. But I did actually make a decision, early on that anything I made, any quote unquote profit, I would donate to the shelter. And so that's both ad revenue from the YouTube channel and then obviously the silly t-shirts that we sell on my website. We're talking pennies, pennies per order. I keep the cost very low. But yeah, everything just, I write it off on my taxes. I donate all of that to the shelter. It's definitely not line in my pockets. It's just not that much. It's very little
Four
money. And
digits, cha-ching,
yeah, four
yeah.
digits. And I spend, easily three digits just keeping the site up, and paying for hosting and domain names and things like that. So it's a wash as long as it all comes out in the wash and I can do a little good for the animals at the NOAA Center. I'm happy. It's definitely not a money maker.
So you have to stick to your day job, I'm sorry to say, Amy.
I
It's
do. Yeah,
or
the day
just
job. Yeah, I've been a
yeah,
FANG
a bit.
recruiter for several years. No secret. Y'all can look at my profile, see who I work for, but I have been in big tech and a full-time recruiter for many years now. So I'll
Yeah.
stick with that. That pays the bills and allows me to run my mouth everywhere else.
Another quarter century. I mean, you could be YouTube famous or whatever else comes out, the new
You never
TikTok. I don't
know.
know. It'd be
You
great.
never know. I'm figuring out TikTok slowly but surely. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not
You're
very good
getting
at
there?
it, but I'm trying.
You don't tilt the phone sideways like a portrait, right?
Right, that's the confusing part, right? Because you want it horizontal for YouTube, but vertical for TikTok, and then who knows what's next? I don't know. I need to talk to my kids, get some tech support up in here.
My Gen X friends always tilt the wrong way, and I'm kind of just sideways, and I got a crick in my neck, and got to go to the massage parlor.
Right.
Goodness sakes, it's a bad day. Yeah, so 2007, I think I saw on your history, the online LinkedIn profile says maybe back then. So you said 25 years, but you're really getting into it, and you've worked in a lot of big tech. Where
I
was the
have.
biggest, like, best vibe you got out of the big tech companies you work for?
Gosh, I mean, there's, I. My first big tech gig was Microsoft. I left Microsoft for Google, and then I left Google for where I'm at today. So y'all gonna have to go look. We don't say no
Yoga
more.
pants, yeah.
But I think they're all very unique, right? They're all very special in their own ways. I will say this. This is the one thing for anyone who's considering FANG. Any big tech companies, any big companies, you can apply this to fintech, you could apply this to manufacturing, you could apply this to aerospace, like any industry that has kind of those quote unquote big players. The number one piece of advice I have for you is don't read too much into the overall company culture. I happen to work for a very highly specialized, super niche part of my current organization. We are doing something that has never been done before at this organization, and we're doing something that really no one else in the org is doing. So you could point at the company and say, oh, they're like this, they're like that. But I will tell you the specific nuances of the business group that I'm partnering with are very, very different. I would say the same at Google, for example. I joined Google specifically to work on engineering leadership hiring. And so I had this incredibly narrow focus where I was only recruiting senior managers or well, regular, I guess, L6 and L7. So software engineering managers and senior software engineering managers. And it was highly specialized, long, very lengthy kind of recruiting cycle, high touch, low volume. And so even within these large companies, I always caution people. Yeah, you can learn a lot. A lot of people have a lot to say on the internet, of course. You can read up about other people's experiences and things like that. But don't underestimate the value and the importance of understanding those little mini subcultures within the larger organization. That I think was the biggest surprise to me going into Microsoft, and I saw that replicated at both other companies that I've been at since.
I've heard a lot of noise about applying for a startup or a less desirable or well-known company. Is there any truth to that? And may I follow up with how many thousands of people apply for a particular job at the big tech? Like, is it annoyingly high?
That's always a fun question because a lot of people are very skeptical that the recruiters can keep up with that volume and the
There's no way.
number of, applicants that we get. And fun fact, we're actually resourced to keep up with that number of applicants. Why do you think we have thousands and thousands of recruiters? So
It's like an assembly
it's
line
kind
for
of
recruiters.
interesting.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It is. And so again, different variables and different team structures. I mean, I'll use Google again as an example. I had someone just recently say, "Oh, you get 3 million, resumes a year. No way you're looking at all of them." And what folks don't understand is that the way Google, at least when I was there, was structured, I assume it's the same. I've been gone a few years now, but there was an entire team of dedicated, I don't know, I don't want to say junior recruiters, I don't think that's fair, but their entire job, they were channel specialists, and their entire job was to review incoming applications. And that's all they did was look at those incoming applications and then help make the match, say, okay, well, this person has this expertise, they should go to YouTube, or they should go to Google Play, or they should go to whatever, cloud, those kinds of things. So yeah, actually, we are resourced, and certainly the exposure that I've had with these large companies is that we are resourced in a way that says you actually can manage this applicant flow. Now, the other variable, of course, is this a fungible high volume role, like a traditional, entry-level software engineer that may get thousands of applications, or is this a highly specialized, machine learning scientist with a focus on quantum physics that might get two applicants, right? Like it's You
True.
can't paint that broad of a brush. You have to understand the nuances of the specific role and the way the recruiting team is resourced.
There's a bunch of crazy headaches, I'm sure, that go on with recruiting. After
Sure.
25 years, you've seen it all. Anything that sticks out that's completely bonkers in your career that you've seen resume-wise or recruiters, or
Oh,
are you just
gosh.
having fun yelling at other hiring managers?
I
Whatever.
mean, that is my favorite part. The relationship that I get to build with hiring managers is critical. We're all recruiters at the end of the day. We all have that responsibility for bringing great folks to our organization, wherever that may be. I think the biggest thing, if I could just grab my magic wand and if I could just save everybody some time, right, and some stress, the biggest thing I want folks to understand is that there is no universal process. It might be lovely if there was, right, Elijah? Like, wouldn't it be great if we could just create a single streamlined, everybody gets hired the same way? Unfortunately, that doesn't work out. How am I? I'll give you a real world example. I am currently looking for both manufacturing technicians. So these are kind of more junior entry level aerospace type roles. I'm also looking for a senior manager that's going to work on reliability for spacecraft. Those are very different positions. I could not have the same recruiting process. I could not ask the same questions. I could not structure the interview in the same way for these two very, very different roles. So my biggest thing that I want job seekers to take away, and really even other recruiters and hiring managers, is create a process that makes sense for this specific hiring need, and then be transparent about that. And this is where the candidate or the applicant or the future prospect deserves the insight and the transparency of this is how we're doing this, this is the why, and this is what your experience is going to be. And then stay true to that. That's the biggest thing. We get very hung up on, oh, the process is broken. It's like, okay, which one? There's a thousand different processes. Help me understand which part, what process you're referring to, and which part you think is broken. And by the time we really dig into the specifics and understand where the frustration is, it's hardly ever the process is broken.
It's not you, it's me. Heard that many times with recruiters.
It's miscommunication, right? It's the awkwardness that comes from a lack of clarity and a lack of communication. And if we can, and that's again one of the reasons I take the time to do these calls and do the videos and do the TikToks and do the blogs and all the things, is because I want to create more transparency. If you know what to expect, you are much more likely to be successful navigating the process if you know what's coming.
Do you feel that even though you put out all this advice in your transparency that comes with it, do people actually listen to it? Do you feel? Seriously.
Not all of them.
Like some people have to want to bang your head on the desk every day. Like,
oh, for sure.
You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've had people, I mean, it's kind of funny, you know, I just kind of laugh at it because what else can you do? But I've definitely had people, like I had a woman who commented multiple times on my YouTube channel that I cost her a job and she lost her job because of me and my advice was terrible. I'm like, okay, I don't know how my job search advice caused you to lose a current job, but here we are, right? That was this person's perspective. I've also had people that just don't believe me. You know, they just flat out think for some reason, I don't know if they think I'm making it up. I don't know if they think I'm, you know, hit my head on the way to record a video. I'm not sure. But I will tell you, Elijah, the thing that keeps me going is all of the people who were helped. You know, I get emails, DMs, comments every day or at least weekly, you know, where somebody says, hey, I use this line from your salary FAQs and this was the result. Or, hey, I you know, got brave and I used your template to reach out to a manager and I'm interviewing next week. So there's enough, thankfully, there's enough of that positive reinforcement and the kind of the happy endings that helps a lot. And it just, in the face of all the negative press and the negative feedback, I know that there's enough people, even if it's 1 in 100 that I managed to help, that's enough for me. That keeps me going. So I'm super grateful for the folks that do take the time to share their wins.
You really seem to have a geeky culture presented in your brand on the YouTubes. Is that really true? Do you just play that up or do you really full out nerd at home?
You know, I will have to take a tour maybe in an upcoming TikTok of our game room.
We are big nerds.
We are big, you know, space nerds and Gen X Star Wars kids, you know, grew up on that. And so, yeah, we're definitely nerdy. And with the videos, it's funny that you mentioned that because I literally hit record. Like, I'll have a topic in mind of like, I'm going to cover this today. And I'll just hit record and just start talking. I don't have a script. I don't plan it out. I just kind of start, you know, like I'm talking to my kid, like I'm talking to my friend, like I'm talking to, you know, someone that I care about. For me, it's the closest I can get to the one-on-one, but I try to create it in a way that is really democratized that anyone can access. So yeah, we're total nerds and what you see is what you get.
Awesome. Because when you flipped that book, it was self-help on the shorts for YouTube and it's Serator or something. I'm like, is that He-Man or G.I. Joe or Skeletor. Inspector Gadget? Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
that's
thanks.
He-Man's nemesis.
Oh, I hate him. See, my memory's fading. I'm getting old, but yeah. So it's like, this is the funny wit that you come up with. It's true. It's honest. It's genuine, but you get something. And for me, I can't remember pop culture, but I remember that Amy made a funny with geek stuff. Yes. So I'm good. And everybody
so
giggles
it
for
landed.
It.
I thought it was hilarious. And I loved it. Yeah, it wasn't like, even a prop. My husband just thought it was funny because he knows I'm nerdy and into that stuff. And I was like, this is my new life coach. I'm going to make a video. So yeah, it was just kind of funny. Accidental.
Do you find that sometimes the layered humor that you present on YouTube gets missed or goes whoosh
definitely.
Over somebody's head?
Oh my goodness. All the time. All the time, Elijah. And that's, you know, I mean, here's a real world example. Just from a few days ago, I made a post on LinkedIn because, you know, my big content areas are obviously LinkedIn and YouTube, right? That's kind of where I spend most of my time, most of my content. But I made just a silly little post, you know, about how kind of riffing off of the Dear Recruiters post, right? And I kind of made a little fun of it and kind of poked a little, you know, tried to have a little fun with it. And a job seeker was highly offended because apparently, and I did not know this, I don't know this person, but this is somebody who had, I guess, in the past written a serious Dear Recruiter post and felt like I was making fun of them. And I'm just like, wow, okay, first of all, I don't know you. Like, we've never met. I certainly did not have you in mind. It wasn't intended as a dig on, you know, vulnerable or hurting job seekers. It was more of a dig on, you know, some of the thought leaders and folks who, you know, say some of these silly things. And so it was really unfortunate because there is this balance of being authentic and being myself. I mean, I don't know how to be anyone else. I've been myself for 48 years. This is what you get, right? But there is a balance between, you know, being authentic and being myself, but then also being mindful of how it lands. So I did feel bad that this person's feelings were hurt. That certainly wasn't the intention. Unfortunately, though, this person did kind of come in hot and very accusatory and was, you know, really kind of rude in the comments. And I thought, that could have been a DM, you know, that could have been like, hey, this kind of hurt. Can you tell me why you're making fun? And then we could have cleared the air. So it is sure. a risk, you know, and I've just decided that there's two paths I could take. I could be just the real authentic Amy Miller that my friends and family all recognize and just, you know, let the chips fall where they may, or I could put on a show. But if I'm putting on a show, I'm not being authentic and you shouldn't trust me. So I err on the side of authenticity and just hope the hits don't hurt too bad.
Maybe it's safe for me just to say agree, and we'll see where it lands. Who knows?
There you go.
I'll agree that this
popular flex. Just agree.
I don't know. Or poll. Agree. I don't
yes,
know. Whatever.
Yes.
Just
unpopular opinion, and then say something very popular.
I can't. I'd rather talk about He-Man. It's fine.
There you go. I have a book on that.
This I got all the self-help I needed, so thank you for this, Amy. This has been cool.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Amy, for stopping by. Darren McKee is going to join me next week talking about humble beginnings, how he's building his company brick by brick with his brother, learning about the success of posting every day for 1,000 days in a row. You don't have to pretend to be anybody else. Take it from Darren. It's really awesome, really humbling, and great to listen to. Hope you'll join me next week on the Job Pod. I'm Elijah. We'll see you soon.